We are talking about studying kingdom leaders. We're doing a shepherd's touch this evening. And with the exception of the 23rd Psalm, David's not in this. And that kind of surprised me when I read this a couple weeks ago, looking for David in there, and he really wasn't. This was about other men, however, who were supposed to be shepherds, and there's some very good lessons that we can learn about them. We often call it the Shepherd's Psalm. In reality, only about the first three verses, if that many, are what you might say are the shepherds are about a shepherd, because verses 4 through 5 break away from the shepherd theme. But they still support the whole principle. It moves from almost a parable form to an application form in the last half of it. I think it would be helpful for us to have the 23rd Psalm read to begin with, and then after we read that, we'll discuss the advantages from it. Sorry, Jim.
How dare you?
I forgot to unlock that one.
Okay.
We just started lesson number 10. Okay, Lamar, if you would please read that 23rd Psalm, please.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepared a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anointed my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Okay, you can see that early in the fourth verse, he's beginning to move away from the shepherd imagery. He does have a reference to the shepherd's rod at the close of that fourth verse, but in 5 and 6, he's clearly moved away from shepherd imagery. But it still teaches the same thing, that those who have good leadership can trust and have confidence in the things talked about in verses 5 and 6. What the author has asked us to do is to contrast this, and we'll do that a little later in the class, is to contrast this with the shepherds that we talked about when we studied Ezekiel 34. These were shepherds who were taking advantage, not only not feeding the sheep, but they were taking advantage of the sheep. And so even in studying that, however, there are some good lessons to learn. What the author asks us to do is to give us a list of the things that the shepherd does for the sheep in this particular psalm. He gave us 2 lines. I kind of wish he'd given us 4 or 5 because mine overflowed the margin. So let's see if we can find the things that the shepherd does for the sheep. And if you can, by the time we're done, I'd like for you to come up with a single word that, from your perspective, best describes what the sheep get from the shepherd, if you had to summarize it with one word. Okay, let's go through the list. What can the sheep count on from a good shepherd?
Well, first of all, I shall not want. They're going to be taken care of.
All of their needs supplied, that's right. All of the needs are supplied. He is not going to be in want. The second one he has in that text. I like that he makes me to lie down in green pastures. There's a couple of things, actually there are 3 things that are implied in this. A number of years ago I read a book about shepherds and drawing comparisons between a good shepherd in the New Testament in Christ's account and the actual role of a shepherd in those days. And the image of sheep lying down in green pastures suggests that there is so much food for them that they can lie down in the midst of their food. The pastures are green. It's a place where they can be assured to have fresh and nutritious food. There's such an abundance of it that they can lie down. Their lying down shows that they are secure under the shepherd's oversight in that particular passage, and that their lying down indicates that the shepherd is attentive even to their particular need for rest. And so there are several things in this one. So they have a safe place to rest. They also have a lush and abundant place in which to rest.
And Paul, just a kind of humorous side note of what they had, so much grace they could lay down. There was a crop down from Glenda's there, was a guy named Shorty Daly, which I knew as a kid, and his pastures were always way overstocked, and the grass never got that high, and his cows were all thin. And one guy commented one time, Shorty Daly's cattle have to graze 80 miles an hour just to get enough to eat through the day. They could not stop and rest because they didn't have enough to,
right,
have to keep trying to find food. And this is a contrast. And this gives you, that's such a peaceful scene, lying down in the green pasture by the quiet waters. I mean, that's one of those pastoral views that just brings you,
yeah,
peace.
This image really has application for leadership in a local church. If you look at the image as it was in the days of shepherds at that time, those who shepherd or pastured their sheep in mountainous regions or in semi or arid regions would have to constantly be on the move in order to find enough grazing for their sheep. Water as well, and that will be coming up. But to keep them constantly on the move to find grazing, and the sheep themselves would have to search among rocks and search among scrub in order to find grazing. This image shows that the shepherd has provided for them in such a way that there's abundance and they don't need to go far in order to be full, and they have time to rest. And so the application for a local congregation is that the leaders in that congregation supply enough spiritual nourishment that the disciples can come and be filled and be content with their filling at that particular time. It means that they needn't scramble about and try to find something edifying on their own, but rather they have been so well provided for that they can eat their fill spiritually. And that needs to be part of the attention of anyone who would be leaders in the Lord's church. They want to see to it that there's plenty of spiritual nourishment for everyone in the congregation. The next image that he has there: he leads me beside the still waters. Still waters. He's not talking about stagnant water. He's talking about water with the absence of turbulence. Water that is gently flowing. Water that is not dangerous. He's not putting the sheep down near water where there's rocks to trip over and break a leg, or water rushing by that could sweep them away, especially if they get themselves a little bit wet. Thereby still waters, waters that are not dangerous. That way that they're provided for again in a safe place. Safety seems to override. Security seems to describe or be between every line. The next image he has is that of a nourishing spirit. He restores my soul. And it's a little difficult to associate that with a shepherd. But sheep who are peaceful and peaceable are less likely to be startled. By less likely to be startled, I don't mean that you can't frighten sheep, because sheep are going to be sheep. That's just what they do. But they're less likely to be at high alert or at a high state of emotion. And so anything that startles them can cause them to panic. This is a relationship between the shepherd and the sheep, where the sheep feel fulfilled in just being sheep, content with their place. Then says, he leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. He does it because that's who he is, and he provides for them trustworthy guidance. The shepherd is going to take the sheep by ways in which the sheep know or the sheep can be avoid being snared in thorns, or can avoid being falling into mud pits or tripping over rocky terrain and so forth. And so he's going to lead them in safe paths. And this is what the leaders in a local congregation do. They lead the congregation in ways, helping them along, in some cases having to press them along, but helping them along in their growth and development in safe and trustworthy ways. You can see also in the beginning of verse 4, and as well as the entirety of that verse, an essence of confidence even in danger. He acknowledges that he's walking in dangerous areas, but he's not so afraid because he has confidence in his shepherd, the Lord. And so it is in local congregations. A congregation may be facing a trial. It may be something difficult come the way. But if the leaders are the kind of men who have set a pattern of steadfastness and set a pattern of competence in their work, in their leadership, the congregation is going to trust them that we'll get through. Even if the congregation is not certain how it's going to happen, or is a little fearful about the potential outcome, they will trust the leadership that they'll get through on the other side. And I personally witnessed this quite often over the years, especially when I was working in Western Pennsylvania, how that difficulties came our way, primarily from outside the congregation. But the congregation at TR was seldom rattled about anything. And it wasn't because they were so laid back, that California laid back stuff. It wasn't because they were laid back, or it wasn't because that they were unemotional. It's because they had confidence in the elders. Elders who had been leading, and that congregation had been led by elders since 1962. Continuity of eldership. And so when a problem came up and Tomlinson and Run had to face a problem, it didn't seem to have the impact that it would have in other places without leadership. And so you can see that even though it is an acknowledged danger, you know, David acknowledges there's danger here. I'm not going to be afraid because I know the one who's leading me through it. And see, this principle can apply to good elders as well. Any discussion about this, the question here? I might have overlooked something, or you might have a comment.
This got an interesting thought in verse 3. He got into the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. I mean, there's an umbrella that the shepherd has, and he's responsible, or he's meeting his charge, or he's protecting his name. There could be a pride here. I'm proud. I am taking care for my name's sake. He's meeting his responsibilities.
I think the other thing I noticed, like even in that short passage, is he leads, mm-hmm. You know, or he makes me, and I also get a strong sense of he's active, he's proactive, you know, he's taking point, but he's proactive and he's taking point, proactively finding good water, proactively steering him away from danger, proactively finding good fields, you know. And it's almost like the sheep are following him. He's not. My understanding is shepherding back then is completely different than modern sheep herding today. Like, you know, it's almost like shepherds today tend to subjugate their sheep. Where back, you know, even with sheepdogs, well, I don't know how much these sheepdogs back then, but, you know, I'm getting a sense here that he cares for the sheep, but he's active and he's proactive for the welfare of the sheep.
He would talk to them. The shepherds would talk to their sheep, and the sheep would recognize the voice of the one who spoke to them. You make a very good point about being very active in seeing to these things, as well as does Steve. He recognizes his stewardship. and he's going to protect the honor of his name and his stewardship, and therefore he does this because that's who he is. And therefore elders or those who lead in a local congregation need to have the same spirit, that they're doing the right thing because it's the right thing. And each time leaders in a local church address a matter and do so with honor, they buy for themselves credibility and security among the members for the next crisis that comes. And it's like investing in a savings account. It is adding to that account constantly of successfully and honorably conducting oneself that will be something that the members will recognize that he has a lot of influence capital for the next crisis that comes up. Okay, good points. My word is security. I see that David is talking about primarily here security, whether it be security in food or water or resting place or safety in danger or safety on the path. Everything is a sense of feeling and being secure because of confidence in the one who's leading. And I think that that must be communicated, and it will take time, must be communicated by those who would be leaders. And this not only applies to those who would lead in a local church, but those who would lead in the community or in a home, in one's family, in an organization of some kind. That given this responsibility, discharging it with honor and looking to the well-being of those placed in one's charge develops influence and character that will be regarded by others in the future. A shepherd is a leader. I find it interesting that Max went ahead and used Laurie Suits again to illustrate his point, but his points are well made. Look at what he says in that first paragraph. While everyone would agree that shepherds are supposed to lead, not everyone who has a position as a shepherd actually leads his flock. And I've heard accounts of those who serve as elders who were simply holding the title, hoping that the congregation will navigate its way into the future. Not going to happen. Over time, inertia in this world eventually means that you're going to slow down. And something's going to happen that will require you have been working all along. Now, you weren't a leader, and therefore what has happened when a crisis comes is both you and the congregation are unprepared. Conversely, not everyone who leads others has a position as a shepherd. Now, I would limit this in this particular case, this study, to a local congregation. If we're talking about in the home or if we're talking about in the community, that's a different matter altogether. But there are persons in a local congregation, especially where there are no shepherds, who are often looked to for leadership. And they must be very careful. What is one of the dangers, especially if it's a preacher, but what is one of the dangers in a congregation that does not have elders and deacons of one or more persons being looked to for leadership in the absence of scripturally ordained leadership? What's the danger?
You allow one or two people to just start pushing or manipulating the majority of the other crowd.
Whether by bullying or manipulation, getting their way. And that's never a good thing. Long term, it will lead to harm. If it's just the preacher, what's the problem with the preacher being looked to for leadership in a local congregation when there is no other recognized leadership? Easy to slip into the pastor system. And there are some evangelists who have become so accustomed to working with congregations that have no elders, and they're so accustomed to being looked to for leadership that they've difficulty working with a local congregation that has elders. And I have seen one case where one evangelist actively worked against the elders because he didn't like the fact that he wasn't as powerful there as he was in other places. So I'm concerned about persons look to for leadership where there is no scripturally appointed leadership. It, at best, they must be very, very careful not to take their influence to a place where it's authority. He uses the illustration of Larry Suits, and he says, first, she reached out to others, and as a result, others reached for her in seeking counsel and advice. That's just natural in human beings. It's natural for the little babies to reach for their moms when they're frightened or they need something. Why? Because they're accustomed to mom being there for them and taking care of them, reaching out whenever they're in need, showing affection and care for them. It's only natural for the kids to reach for mom. I didn't get offended when my girls, when they were very, very little, and would skin a knee or would fall down or would get frightened if they go grab Coral. That's okay. It's because Coral is the nurturer. She's the one that gave of herself so much that the kids wanted to come to her. And the same thing will be true in a local congregation. Among those who lead, only those who reach out to others are going to be the ones that others will trust and reach out to them whenever they find themselves in the need or wanting counsel, wanting advice, wanting encouragement. Even in congregations that have scripturally ordained elders, some of them are a little bit better at it than others. I'm talking about in the sense of reaching out to other people. And these typically tend to be the ones that the members will come to if they have a concern. Whereas someone else who may be quiet or sort of reserved will be less likely. So what that says is if we want to be leaders, we need to be the kind of persons who want to reach out to others. As Jim said, take the initiative, be proactive in these things. Reach out and develop an interest in and a relationship with the sheep so that the sheep will have confidence in those who are leading. He goes on to write, she helped numerous people find their way to God. That is part of the role of a shepherd, to lead others in the paths of righteousness or the way that leads home to heaven. He acknowledges that she was not a shepherd in the sense that an elder is, but look what he says. Elders could learn from her. When you reach out to others, others will reach out to you for help. That is, and here's the analysis, they will trust in you and seek your guidance and counsel. They will give you respect and will have a mind to accept your guidance. In other words, they will have confidence. Why? Because you showed an interest in them. Do you know why cold calls don't work whenever you're spreading the gospel? Door knocking?
People are very resistant to it.
Well, there's a reason why they're resistant, even more so now than they were in the past. But even in the past, it was difficult. When I was in my 20s and door knocked in Tampa with Almond Williams, we found it to be the most ineffective means of generating Bible study that we could engage in. And it's because people are not going to be interested in you telling them about their eternal soul until they know why. If you have an interest in them, if you show an interest in someone else, they're more inclined to listen to you when you talk with them about those important things. So elders who want to be trusted by the congregation need to cultivate relationship, get to know the sheep. Get to know them. There's a book out that's entitled Shepherds Smell Like Sheep, and that makes good sense, doesn't it? It's because they spend time with them. The same thing with those who are shepherds in a local congregation. They need to develop connections with all of the members, and this requires work. This requires effort. It requires personal expenditure. I'm not trying to be existential here, but each of us has a certain level or a certain amount of emotional and mental energy. And in a given day, when we come home at the end of the day at work, we've spent a lot of that energy. That's why the Lord teaches us that we need to rest and refresh ourselves. 7 days or 6 days you can work. On the seventh day, rest. It's because he understood in our nature, we need time to refresh ourselves, not just physically. Elders, on the other hand, will find themselves, and even deacons for that matter, will find themselves expending themselves more in terms of that than perhaps they would as just a member of the congregation. Is that the way it should be? Not necessarily, but that's the way it is. And so we spend that energy more so, which is why you'll hear someone who has served as an elder in his 60s or 70s saying that he feels like he's 80 or 90. In a sense, it ages you. But that's what shepherds do. They give themselves for the sheep. Jesus is the good shepherd who risked his life and gave his life for the sheep. That's what shepherds do. Their interest is in the well-being of others, and so they go out of their comfort zone. They make that extra effort to get to know the lives of other people. And that helps. That process is helped over time by getting to know these persons, because in the process we discover that we really do like them. We really think that there's someone good inside of them, and that we can elicit that good and even better to come out. And that's an exciting thing. And so we want to get to know them, and as we get to know them, we find we genuinely like them. It's at that point that we're willing to make sacrifices on their behalf or their well-being. Any discussion about this section? Let's look at the next one, the shepherds of Israel. Now we're going to do the Ezekiel 34 text. Steve, if you're ready with that, please.
Okay. Ezekiel 34, 1 through 10. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to those shepherds, Thus says the Lord God, Woe, shepherds of Israel, who have been feeding themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flock? You eat the fat and clothe yourselves with the wool. You slaughter the fat sheep without feeding the flock. Those who are sickly you have not strengthened. The diseased you have not healed. The broken have not bound up. The scattered you have not brought back. Nor have you sought for the lost, but with force and with severity you have dominated them. And they were scattered for lack of a shepherd, and they became food for every beast of the field and were slaughtered. My flock wandered through all the mountains and on every high hill, and my flock was scattered over all the surface of the earth, and there was no one to seek for them. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. As I live, declares the Lord God, surely because my flock has become a prey, my flock has even become food for all the beasts of the field for lack of a shepherd. My shepherds did not search for my flock, but rather the shepherds fed themselves and did not feed my flock. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord God, Behold, I am against the shepherds, and I will demand my sheep from them, and make them cease from feeding from them, and will make them cease from feeding sheep, so the shepherds will not feed themselves anymore. But I shall deliver my flock from their mouth, that they might not be food for them.
Okay. In this reading, again, he gave us four lines. We could have done with 14. He wants us to list good lessons that we can learn from the failings of these bad shepherds of Israel. And so if you have your list, let's go down through and not particular order if you wish, but go through and see if you can find good things about shepherds that you learn from the failings of these bad shepherds. Let's start with the first one.
They fed themselves and not the flock.
Which tells us that who gets fed first?
The flock gets fed.
first. Right. So shepherds must feed the flock and feed the flocks first. For those who lead in a local congregation, elders and even deacons to a certain extent are admonished to be skillful in the word. There is a reason why they need to be skillful in the word. In fact, one of the qualifications is not a novice. Needs to be someone who is not a new Christian but is familiar with the word of God. The reason for this is they're the ones responsible for feeding the sheep or feeding the congregation. And they must see to the well-being and the feeding of the sheep first. Here he is criticizing them feeding themselves and not the sheep. The sheep get attention first. Second one. What do you have for a second one?
Well, if you look in verse 4, it says, "The weak you have not strengthened, nor have you healed those who were sick."
Okay. So then shepherds would strengthen the ones who are weak. They would heal the ones who were sick or diseased. They would bind up broken limbs on sheep who have had those injuries. They would go out and bring back those that were lost. They would seek for the lost and put themselves at risk, as did the shepherd of the Lord's account. They would never take advantage of them, which seems to be the case here. The verses 7 through 10 refers to the fact that they'd taken advantage, and that's not going to happen anymore, God says. So they don't take advantage of the sheep. That is, their leadership is not for their personal aggrandizement, but rather for the well-being of the sheep. They're instructed here to hear the word of the Lord, which tells them that they are accountable. In fact, we learn from studying Hebrews 13, the 7th and the 17th verse, that those who are shepherds in the flock, or those who are elders, have one to whom they must give account as well. Peter, in fact, refers to that in 1 Peter 5. And so they are accountable. There is a long list here of things that good lessons we can learn from the failings of the bad shepherds. When we look at these things, we need to look at them not as a don't do, don't do, don't do, but do better, do better, do better. Look at verse 3. You eat the fat and clothe yourselves with the wool. They get the benefit of their office of leadership, but they're not handling the responsibilities that come with it. I would say that there are some benefits, in fact, some blessings that come from serving as leaders in the Lord's church. And I don't want to suggest that there aren't any. But those blessings need to be seen as subsidiary to the role, not the purpose for the role. The purpose of the role is feeding the sheep. But his question at the end of verse 2, should not the shepherds feed the flocks? When you examine the New Testament, you find this to be the primary work of those who would serve as elders. And even deacons have a role in this matter.
And Paul, even in your young time when you worked on the dairy, I'm sure the man said, the chores come first, all the cattle get fed before we go in to eat. I mean, isn't that typically something that you would hear?
Yeah, break time wasn't until the milk was in the milk house and the cows were relieved. And believe me, they needed to be relieved. They came in, they were, in some cases, especially the ones who just come fresh, they're in agony. I need to be sympathetic as a dairyman. I need to be sympathetic to their needs. And whatever need I think I have, you know, I'd like a cup of coffee. That waits until that animal is relieved first. And so that makes a good application in a local congregation. I may have some personal needs of my own. I need to attend to, since I have that responsibility, I need to attend to those who are suffering among the sheep first before I see to my own needs. And that's why I say, have been saying all along, that you spend yourself in this role of being a servant in a local congregation. That's not a bad thing. It draws us closer to what Jesus did for us, spent himself for our well-being. Or what Paul said he did for the brethren, I will most gladly spend and be spent for the cause of Christ. It's just what we do. Service in this world glory in the world to come.
The other thing I get from this passage in Ezekiel is you've got to fight off predators.
What's that?
You have to fight off predators.
Oh, yes. Well, that's another good point. Thanks for bringing that up. I overlooked that, and I shouldn't have. Do you notice what he says that the sheep did when the shepherds weren't doing their job?
They scattered and were devoured.
They scattered and were devoured. What's going to happen in a local congregation if the elders don't do their job, or if they do their job poorly and take advantage of the sheep? The sheep are going to go somewhere else. Elders should not be surprised to have mishandled their work. Should not be surprised if some of the members decide to go and become part of the community Bible church movement, or decide to go and be part of a congregation that's facing difficulty or drifting into error, or abandon the faith altogether. Good points. Jim, I'm going to put a gold star on your chart this evening. Rehoboam, power or people? Wow. I didn't realize how much that first page was going to take time-wise. I like what he says there. Shepherds are people. He makes the point, we are now at the place in our study where we transition from general leadership principles to the specifics of shepherding by elders in the local church. So from this point onward, we've been doing it all along. But from this point onward, everything that we learn about leadership from Old Testament examples or New Testament instructions, let's make some application to leadership in the local church. I would add to it that Max should have included deacons as well, because especially when we get to studying the matter in our Sunday morning class, we'll learn that deacons also have a role in both the teaching as well as the leadership on a limited basis in the local church. Okay. He uses the example of Rehoboam, unplugged from the people, and this is brilliant. He talks about this person, this king, being a good example of the selfish shepherds of Ezekiel 34. Rehoboam was son of Solomon. Right off the bat, and sometimes it's hard for me to turn off the psychologist. Right off the bat, daddy issues, right? I mean, can you imagine being the son who's supposed to take place of the father who was the richest and most successful king in Israel? What do you do to distinguish yourself from daddy? Well, this fellow went in the wrong direction. For Rehoboam, it was all about power. It was about showing that he had the clout to do whatever he wanted to do in Israel. When I read about Rehoboam, there is a man who's dealing with some serious insecurity. And I think it's because he was in the shadow of his father as he grew up. But let's leave the psychology alone and see what he did in terms of his leadership. Look at, and for time's sake, let's not bother reading it, but I do want to talk about what we see in the texts. What was the initial disposition of the people of Israel toward Rehoboam being king? In the very beginning, in the first, when he's, you know, about to, his rule is about to be announced and so forth, and he'll be officially declared the king.
They all came to him to be the king.
That's right. They showed their approval and their support for his leadership. In a local congregation, as with those who would help in Acts chapter 6, the best way for a congregation to help select shepherds is to look out among themselves for those who meet the qualifications, and then they are appointed by the qualifications. In this case, the people were doing just that in Israel. They came together to show their support for Rehoboam as king. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I had a job. I worked for a Fortune 500 company, and when they would promote a manager, 9 times out of 10, they would do it from within their own ranks. And to their credit, they did look at how much the opinion of their peers, and not in a popularity contest, but in how much their peers respected them. Mm-hmm. In essence, they would ask, is this the kind of person that their peers would look at and go, yeah, I'd work for that guy. I would respect him enough to be my boss. Again, not a popularity contest, but they would at least look at, you know, the senior managers would look at, you know, when they would promote somebody from within, they would go, is this somebody that their peers respect?
Yeah.
And they would work for it.
And that's a good place to start, but
it really helped morale. It,
and that's a good thing, and that's why having the congregation involved in the selection and appointment of elders brings solidarity. But in either case, whether we're talking about Israel, whether we're talking about the local congregation, the Israel and the local church, whenever they choose their leaders and show their support for them, are taking a leap of faith. This person has not held that role in the past. And so what they're doing is they're expressing their confidence in him to fulfill his responsibility in that role. That's what they did with Rehoboam, and that's what we would do in a local congregation with those who are being appointed as elders. That was the initial disposition. What was the disposition of the, and he should word this, the later rebel Jeroboam? Because in this verse, he's not a rebel. What was the disposition of Jeroboam in verses 2 to 2, partway through 4? Rehoboam does what? Not at this time. Not quite at this time. He does rebel, but not at this time. When they call for Jeroboam, when Jeroboam comes, the assembly of Israel comes before him and they speak to Rehoboam saying, your father, Rehoboam at this particular point appears willing to, and Israel seems to be expressing this in summoning him. Israel seems to think, and Rehoboam potentially could have reasoned with him to lighten their load. We know eventually that this was part of God's plan long term, that Jeroboam would take the northern kingdom. But in the beginning, even those that you might think would be opposed to him had the potential, and Rehoboam had the opportunity to reason with the people as well as with Jeroboam and defuse this situation. If Rehoboam had the heart of a shepherd, what would he have done at this point if he had the heart of a shepherd?
Would have listened to the sheep, or would have been taking care of the whole sheep instead of taxing them?
Well, even more so than that, here's what he did. He separated himself from the sheep. Rehoboam says, I'm going to go away for 3 days. I'm going to go off by myself. In other words, he left the people hanging there for 3 days instead of having the moral courage to address it. I think we'll see a little later on why it was that Rehoboam separated himself. But if he'd have been a good shepherd, he'd have stayed there, faced the music, and dealt with the matter at that particular point, if he was leadership material. So he goes and seeks the counsel in verses 6 and 7. He goes and seeks the counsel of wise old heads, which is a good thing, isn't it? It's a good thing to seek advice, but not to make the people hang for 3 days in order to do it. So he talks to the elders, the ones who were contemporary with his father Solomon, and asks them, how do you think I should answer the people? If you talk to them well, they'll be your servants forever. That was a wise thing, but I still think it was a mistake for him to have withdrawn. Was it a wise thing for Rehoboam to seek counsel of the younger men? No. Why wasn't it a wise thing for him to seek counsel of the younger men?
They didn't have the experience.
But it's further testimony that Rehoboam is not qualified. Let's turn the psychologist back on for a minute. You know what he's doing? He's looking for the answer he wants. He, first of all, didn't have an answer whenever he was challenged about this matter in the beginning. I'm certain he was unsure of himself Again, the insecurity. He didn't have an answer for them in the beginning, which he should have done, but he didn't have an answer. So he withdraws for 3 days. He asks the older fellows, what should I do? And they give him advice, the same advice that was given to him by the people. Israel gave him advice. It seemed that Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, would cooperate, that it wouldn't be the same problem that they had that sent him to Egypt in the first place. And the older fellas told him this. Rehoboam doesn't want those answers. He's going to go until he finds someone to give him the advice that he wants to receive. If this was really what he wanted in the first place and had the moral courage, even that of a fool, he would have said that to Israel. He would have said that to the old men, but he's waiting for someone with whom to share the blame. So he gets the advice of the young men. This is a fellow who has some problems. He's not suited to be a leader. His first mistake was withdrawing. His second mistake was waiting for the answer he wanted to hear. Next question. God already planned to divide Rehoboam's kingdom. What did the king do to make it happen? What's the next thing he did? After listening to the advice of the young men, he goes back to the people of Israel after making them wait and says what to them?
He says, my father taxed you, but I'm going to tax you even more and put more burden upon you and scorpions, and he was going to be pretty mean about it.
Absolutely. My father ruled you with whips, I'll rule you with scorpion whips. Not sure what the difference is, but it can't be good. Here is a fellow who was going to say what he wanted to say. Now, all of this resulted in turmoil. We want to see the cause of his failure. Number of things. Let's not look at what he did, but what it reflected. It reflected first that he was self-willed. One of the qualifications of an elder is that he is not self-willed. It reflected that he was proud. He wanted to save face. Here is a man who has pride. Pride is too heavy a baggage for an elder or a deacon to carry. Fear of losing power. And that's what seems to drive him looking for the answer that would keep the people cowed. Elders do not lead the congregation by putting them in fear or by abusing them as the elders of Israel did. The shepherds of Israel did in Ezekiel 34. He leads. He does not drive them by fear. And as I said, he clearly has some daddy issues. So here is a fellow not suited to be a leader. And he demonstrates all the things that one doesn't do. I would suggest that we take positive lessons away from him. All Israel was behind him. Let's listen to what you have to say. Yes, times were difficult under Dad. Let's see if we can't make it a better kingdom now. In a local congregation, yes, we've had difficult times in the past. Yes, we've had other leaders or other preachers who gave us a difficult time. We're not the same elders or we're not the same evangelists. Let's build a better local church. Reason with the people. Spend time with the sheep. Don't separate from the sheep and go off and talk to a wolf about how he should lead sheep.
Well, it's also like managers are just saying, is that from the perspective of an employee? For me, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm going to do my job regardless, but I'm just saying it's way easier if I've had some managers who that's all they do is they're very remote. They hide themselves away in a corner office and they don't interact with the employees or with you, and they just kind of use these electronic messages. That's the only way you know of them.
So the word we're looking for is accessible?
Yes. You know, versus somebody who I can grab their ear and talk to them. That way, you know, if they have to come down hard or this, that, the other, the relationship is just way easier to get things done.
Okay, so the first thing we'll learn from this is to be accessible. Listen to admonishment, listen to instruction, hear what the sheep are dealing with. The second lesson that we will take away from this is to even consider those who in the past may have been opposed but have potential to be an asset in the present and future, which is what he should have done with Jeroboam. He would not separate himself. Those who are shepherds would seek the counsel of others, but realize that at the end of the day, they're the ones who are responsible. You can't throw the old heads that you've asked for advice under the bus by saying, well, it was their idea. Realize that at the end of the day, the buck stops here. Was it Truman? I think it was Harry Truman that said that. Avoid seeking counsel from those who are younger. Use them as an asset in the congregation, but not when it comes to instruction or advice. I think these things are the will of the Lord for those who would be leaders. Looking at the last section, mercy, we're out of time. Looking at the last section, let's look quickly at it. Be an outsider, not an insider. And what he means by this, it's a little bit of a pun, is we get outside of ourselves. Rehoboam thought of no one but himself. We need to be outward thinkers about the well-being of others, the good, what would be in their best interest, and so forth. Be a grown-up, not a kid. This is a mature responsibility. Even those who would serve as deacons tend to be younger men, need to realize that there is a measure of maturity that must come with the job, and therefore, with that maturity, their responsibility must be exercised and cannot blame youth or blame a lack of experience. Be a grown-up. Be a giver, not a grabber. Be outreaching with help rather than seeing what one can get for themselves. I probably told you about the elder that went rogue while I was at Tomlinson Run. He was all about what he could get for himself and his family. And because of that, ended up leaving the eldership in the church. Be willing to give rather than to see what one can get for themselves. Any discussion about these things? I'm sorry I had to rush toward the end. Any discussion? Any final thoughts?
And, being an outsider, not an insider, just you must think of others and their needs. I mean, and that's just not for elders. It needs to be every Christian. It needs to be that. Or not just leaders, but that should be an attitude of every Christian. And so often, those that become depressed have the tendency to focus in on themselves and on the problems and the way I'm thinking. One of the ways to get out of that is to start thinking about others and to start helping others. It takes the focus off yourself. All of a sudden, depression seems to start slipping away.
In one of the posts that I'll be putting up later in this week, it tells the story about a fellow by the name of Jimmy. The doctor had just give him the news that his pancreatic cancer was now stage 4 and that he needs to go home and set his affairs in order. When the doctor was leaving his office toward the end of the calling hours, he kept shaking his head on the way out to his car thinking, I hate to give news like that to somebody like Jimmy. And when he gets in the parking lot, he sees Jimmy underneath of somebody's car. And the person standing up there is handing Jimmy tools. And he says, what are you doing down there? And Jimmy pokes his head out and says, just because I have cancer doesn't mean I can't help somebody. It helped him get his mind off what he was going through. And that's a good thing. And I think that the best treatment that we can sometimes give ourselves, not avoiding our problems, but giving us a sense of satisfaction and patience with our problems, is helping someone else with theirs. Very good point. If there's nothing else, let's close our Bible study with a word of prayer. Brother Steve, if you would, please.